Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Chief Information Officer and Assistant Director for Science and Technology at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives in the Justice Department. Rick, this is a return engagement for you on the show. It's nice to have you back. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me back.
You know, you are the person who, I think, of all CIOs in government, you're one of the people who we get to see around a lot. We do get to hear from, but it's usually around mobility and mobile exchange and all your work on that type of topical area. So we're going to get into a little details about ATF specifically. And I think there's a lot to talk about because actually it's been about two and a half years since you were last on my show. So let's start with an update on some old priorities. Back then, ATF was at the beginning stages of actually two major RFPs for technologies, one for infrastructure and one for software maintenance. So let's just start with the infrastructure one. What's the status? Did you ever award it? And if not, why? And if so, who and what and why? Give me all the details.
We actually made an award on that IT infrastructure contract back in December of 2012. So it was a fairly lengthy process to get to that point, but we were able to make that award to Lockheed Martin. And they executed a transition for that contract from the previous provider to the new infrastructure provider in a rapid time frame. We gave them a relatively short amount of time. They were able to do it in about 90 days, which was something like record time for transitioning a contract of that magnitude. So they really did a great job taking over responsibility for our IT infrastructure. And that contract was really intended to accomplish a number of different things. So we had been, as an organization, a user, a consumer of desktop outsourcing since 1997. So as ATF, we were an early adopter of that kind of model for IT infrastructure provision. And obviously a lot of other organizations also moved in that direction. NASA with their Odin contract, Navy with an MCI. And so we were in that kind of a relationship. And the challenge with that relationship is that a lot of different services end up bundled into a single price. And what we discovered was it becomes very hard to tell kind of what you're paying for each component of that price. And particularly in today's IT environment, there are a lot of options for how you can acquire some of those services. So that seat price that we had originally also included things like email services, help desk services, application hosting. There's a whole variety of things embedded in that one price. So what we try to do with this new contract, and it's called the Enterprise Standard Architecture 4 because it's the fourth generation of the contract, we try to break up that monolithic service model a little bit. So rather than having one price for this big bundle of services, we broke it up into about six different service pillars that would allow us to make, as appropriate, sourcing decisions about each of those pillars. So we didn't necessarily lock ourselves into one service provider for all of those services, and we had better visibility into the price of each of those pillars. And so far, that's worked well with ESA 4. So one of the things that we had decided to do around the same time as the ESA 4 award was to go with email as a service. And because of the way we had structured the ESA contract, we essentially just didn't exercise that particular service pillar on ESA 4. So it made it very easy to consciously decide to go with a different service provider for email and collaboration services. So that's worked as intended. And we're eager to continue maturing some of those services in each of those pillars. Right now, we're still a little bit in a legacy maintenance mode, so kind of sustaining the same types of services that we had under a previous service provider. And some of that has to do with the timing of the contract award. It was in the middle of FY13, along with sequestration, a variety of other things that really constrained some of our ability to move forward decisively on some things in IT. But we are looking forward now that we're moving into kind of the second base year of that contract to start exercising some of the options to do some what we call transformation under each of those service pillars, where we can move from the legacy mode of delivering those services into a more as a service model. So we're doing that with some technology refresh. We're looking to do that with some of our application hosting. We've already done it to some extent with a managed print service. So we're really trying to transition from the legacy mode of delivering those services into a real as-a-service model across all of those pillars. So that's really where we are with that contract at this point.
When you describe the different pillars, I think you said there were six service pillars. Is Lockheed the one in charge of all six of those, or is Lockheed in charge of one of those pillars, and potentially there's five other pillars that you're looking at for help with?
At this point, Lockheed is in charge of essentially five of the six. So the one we subtracted out was the email and collaboration as a service. So they're still doing a little bit of account management around that particular service, but in terms of delivery of that pillar, that's now, it's Microsoft Office 365, so it's a separate service provider there. But the other pillars Lockheed Martin is responsible for, in some cases, like, for example, managed print service, they've got partners on board. Xerox, obviously, is being one of the major providers that's delivering the managed print service. So they do have partners in certain areas, but we do have Lockheed in there as the single point of accountability and delivery for all of those other service pillars.
So is this considered different than seat management? Because I'm guessing here ATF probably owns the hardware, owns the software, or at least it's more of a managed service perspective versus a seat management.
At this point, we're still transitioning from the old model, so we're still kind of have some of the remnants of the seat management or that kind of a model. But we are consciously trying to move toward the as-a-service model, where actually, if we do it the way we intend, we won't actually own any of the hardware. So it will truly be an as-a-service model. We still have some of the legacy baggage, if you will, where because of the contract transition, a lot of the hardware in the environment today is government-owned, and so we need to work with Lockheed to figure out a way to transition to a more true as-a-service model there.
And you can't just turn it off and say it's up to you guys now. It doesn't work that way, huh?
Yeah, not quite, no, because there are some things we need to put in place to really get that as-a-service model working as it should.
Is there a timing around that? I mean, is that something that is a fiscal year 14, fiscal year 15, where you would say, by this date, we want to get out of that government-owned hardware and move to the as-a-service? I know it's not going to be a turn-on, turn-off, look, we're done, but when do you feel like you've made the success from a timeline perspective?
Yeah, we're kind of doing it opportunistically. So some of the timing of it is we do have to make some discrete investments to get to the as-a-service model. And so this year, the couple of investments we're looking to make are one in technology refresh, which will go along with truly kind of user device experience as a service, if you will. So that's kind of a fancy terminology for, you know, providing the devices that users have in their hands as a service. So, you know, we won't own it at the end of the four-year life cycle of those devices. We'll just transition into a next refresh for all those devices. So that saves us from, you know, having to worry about disposing of that hardware at some point or having to make a discrete investment in the future for another refresh. So we're consciously doing that this year. We're also looking at moving to application hosting as a service to the extent possible this year, which will hopefully relatively quickly move us out of some of our legacy data center space, which obviously is helpful from a data center consolidation standpoint, and will also get us out of the mode of maintaining a lot of expensive infrastructure for storage and application infrastructure and so forth. So those are the kind of the two nearest term targets. Downstream, we're certainly also looking at things like communication, network communication as a service. That's a little trickier in terms of how we make that happen, but in terms of maintaining our LAN, WAN infrastructure and trying to do that more as a service, again, with the hope of getting out of having to do, you know, costly periodic refreshes of switches and that kind of thing. But that's probably not an FY14 thing. That's probably 15 or beyond.
When people hear as a service, the first thing they think of is cloud. Everything is going to be in the cloud. For you guys, it sounds like as a service is more like a way the vendor will deliver the services to ATF. So, for instance, you know, just take application hosting. That may be a cloud, but the LAN, WAN, the communications networks as a service is probably not a quote-unquote cloud. Do I have that right?
Exactly. And frankly, managed print service is something similar too, where, I mean, that is very much physical hardware sitting in our offices. But the notion is if you're providing that as a service, I don't have to worry about the mix of equipment, the maintenance lifecycle of the equipment, the periodic refresh of the equipment. All of that is handled seamlessly by the service provider if it's working right. And all I'm paying is a monthly, yearly, predictable cost for a service level that is guaranteed in that arrangement. So I don't have to worry about the details of how that service is provided. I don't have to get into the details of, you know, all the management of the hardware and the life cycle and all that other kind of thing, configuration management, all that sort of stuff. All of that should be handled by the service provider.
And obviously through SLAs in the contract is very similar, I guess, to if you have someone who comes to your house and gives you services for your furnace, your heater. You don't care what they do. Just make sure it works. And if I'm cold, I can turn the heat on. If I'm hot, I can turn the air conditioning on. I mean, that's the commoditization of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the managed print model, for example, is based on a certain expectation of the volume of printing and copying and faxing. I mean, hopefully we're not going to do too much faxing anymore, but printing and copying, scanning, that kind of thing. It's an estimated volume a year, and essentially you're paying for that volume of capability, and you're not worrying about what exactly the mix of devices is. There is some subtlety there where obviously the devices have to be up to, you know, our demand on them. And frankly, that's some of the struggle that we've had rolling out managed print, is getting that mix of devices right. And I think we kind of, I'll say, did a disservice to some of our users initially, where the equipment that we rolled out did not perform the way we were expecting it to. And so it was a significant step down from what they were used to. And so, as you can imagine, there was a lot of dissatisfaction there. And so we're now going back and adjusting that mix of equipment so that it better meets the capabilities that our users are actually expecting, to get them back to where they need to be from a capacity and capability perspective.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. We can come back. We can get into some of the other old priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Chief Information Officer.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Chief Information Officer. Now, Rick, before break, we spent a lot of time talking about the new contract that you guys awarded, I think, in 2012 to Lockheed Martin, looking at really IT infrastructure. One quick question about that Lockheed contract, because one of the goals that you had talked about was moving outside of that seat management model, because you felt like you could control costs differently and better. Are you seeing changes in the cost structure? Are you seeing better costs, more efficiencies, better value?
We feel like we have better levers to manage cost. So we had to, unfortunately, use them fairly extensively last fiscal year because of sequestration, where, you know, we found ourselves partway through a fiscal year trying to close what turned out to be a fairly significant funding shortfall for the organization. And so because we had better visibility into service levels and costs associated with them, we were able to work with Lockheed to at a relatively fine level of detail, say, in these specific service pillars, we want to adjust service levels so that we can control costs. And we know what the impact of that will be. We believe that's an acceptable change to service levels, and it will help us get to a manageable set of costs for the organization. So, yeah, in that regard, it achieved that objective. I think it's still early in the life cycle of the contract, so we'll have to see if that level of manageability, if you will, continues through the whole life cycle of the contract. But at least in this first year, I think we've been reasonably pleased with how that's worked out.
And that's something that you guys built into the contract, that if service needs to go up or down, you can turn the knob, so to speak, and work with Lockheed Martin and say, hey, we thought we'd print 1,000 pages, but we're only printing 500. Let's change the service level to maybe 750 to split the difference as some way to give you a little bit of buffer. Is that how you built it into the contract?
Yeah, we explicitly built in volume flexibility and, in fact, built in a lot of upward flexibility because we built the contract to be usable by other federal agencies. Today, the only other user of the contract is the Marshal Service, so we partnered with them going into the award to Lockheed Martin. They're using the services today as well, but we're still looking for additional partners to join the service delivery model, if you will, so that we can collectively realize some of those benefits of cost benefits of volume discounts, essentially. What we actually went through in fiscal 2013 was actually also adjusting service levels. So, for example, we took a hard look at our help desk, and we've been running a 24/7 help desk, and you looked at it and really noticed that the majority of the call volume was during normal business hours. And so we saw there was an opportunity there to maybe scale back on the cost and the service levels, having a modest impact on people, because obviously people still call outside of normal business hours, but a relatively significant cost saving. So we did adjust service troubles like that.
It's interesting that this is open to other agencies. You said Marshal Service, usually you hear a contract like this, you say it's open to maybe anyone else in justice or maybe someone in the law enforcement area. Mm-hmm. So, but if I'm at, you know, pick an agency, USDA, Commerce, whoever, I could actually come to you guys and use the contract?
Absolutely. Yeah, we actually built that flexibility in, which was not easy. That's not in the comfort level of a lot of acquisition organizations. And so it took a little bit of effort to get that built into the contract. But we do have the ability to support up to 30,000 users. So it's a fairly significant volume there. And we actually had multiple federal agencies involved in the technical evaluation. So in addition to ATF and the Marshal Service, we had DEA and the Federal Trade Commission represented on our technical evaluation board because we did want it to be a multi-agency vehicle. And at the time, all three of those other organizations were interested in using it, and we're hopeful all of them will still join us at some point.
Let me move over to the other RFP that back in 2011, you guys were just in the beginning stages of around software maintenance. Give us the status update on that.
So we did make that contract award as well. It was kind of an interesting time for the organization in the sense that we had a lot of efforts in motion that required software maintenance, software development expertise. I think it's safe to say that we've learned a lot of lessons through that process, and a lot of that has to do with the way in which we manage software development efforts. I think, you know, as Steve Van Rolke would say, there were a lot of teachable moments there in terms of how we both work as an IT organization with our counterparts in the mission part of the organization, and also how we work with our support contractors in doing software development. We were kind of on the cusp of moving from a waterfall development methodology to something that looked more agile. We didn't get quite there, so we kind of ended up somewhere in the middle around a somewhat iterative, incremental development methodology, but I think all of us were kind of going through a growing pain of trying to figure out how to make that work. So, like I said, we kind of learned a lot of lessons there and have a lot of information that we can reuse going forward as we think about software developments in the future.
And really, if you think about 2011, that's really when that agile push started. And here you are awarding a contract, really, that really probably got started in 2009. So agile was not really in that discussion point. So did you guys have to basically change on the fly, or did you something that was built into the contract to an extent, but maybe not to the great extent that you would now do it because of a better understanding of really what agile means?
We certainly tried to make as many adjustments on the fly as we could, but it was certainly not built into the contract to the extent that we would now want to incorporate it into any future software development efforts.
Let me jump forward now. We have an RFI for a next generation case management system. Obviously, I know it's just in the early stages, but give me a sense. What's your thinking behind that RFI?
That RFI has actually been a couple of years in the making. So our case management system today is about 15 years old. It's certainly kind of lived a long and fruitful life, but it's time to be retired. It's built on some out-of-date technology in terms of Power Builder and some other things. And it's Oracle on the back end from a database perspective. But you know, really, it's the front end where we don't have a lot of flexibility to tailor it for today's mobile environment. It's not easy to evolve to meet the evolving needs of the organization. It's not terribly well integrated, frankly, even with itself, let alone with some of the other systems and information in our environment. So it's time for an upgrade and a modernization. So we spent actually a fair amount of time thinking about what case management means to us today and really went through a pretty exhaustive business process reengineering and automation exercise to really lay out what our requirements were for this next generation case management system. And actually those requirements at a high level are included in the RFI. So they're pretty detailed functional requirements in there for what we think this new system needs to contain and the functionality it needs to deliver. What we're trying to do within the next generation case management system is really try and leverage a business process management platform or application platform to help ease the development of that system. So the theory there is using a COTS platform of that type will take away some of the core development activities that we otherwise have to do on a customized basis and really allow us to focus on tailoring the platform to meet some of the functional requirements in our environment. And we've looked at a number of different platforms so far. The RFI is really intended to get a little bit more granular information, both from the providers of the platforms themselves, but also the folks that have developed on those platforms, and get a sense of what's worked well, what should we be thinking about in terms of trying to develop a case management system on a platform like this, you know, how should we structure the acquisition. And so we're really trying to learn from what other efforts out there have worked well of this type that we can reuse and maximize the likelihood of success as we move into this effort.
So the obvious question comes from it, well, beyond the timing, because I think everyone wants to know when's the RFP going to come out. But the obvious question comes back to me is Justice Department led the case management line of business. I know it's old administration. No one wants to talk about the old administration, but I know it's still around. I know there was the program Sentinel. Can you talk a little bit about how that fits into what you're doing? Is that something, because it's, you're in the RFI stage, maybe Sentinel will meet your needs or some kind of variation of it?
You know, we actually looked pretty hard at the existing, particularly criminal investigative case management systems in the department. You know, there's a lot, case management has so many different flavors to it. And you know, there's litigation case management, which the department also had a significant hand in. But we specifically looked at the criminal investigative case management systems, particularly FBIs and DEAs, because those are the ones that are probably closest to the way we do case management. So we did look at what the FBI had developed. And, you know, what ultimately led us to pursue a different path there was that, you know, frankly, the way the FBI does case management is different than the way we do case management. Just the business processes are different. And on top of that, we also have a regulatory mission, which the FBI doesn't. So in terms of looking at, did it make sense to try and, you know, use Sentinel as a starting point and build from there, or really start from scratch with something that is purpose-built for us, we made the judgment that really it probably made more sense to start with something that was tailored to our particular organizational needs. You know, frankly, the organization that had probably the most similar case management system to our needs was DEA, because when you think about it, they also have a regulatory mission, and a lot of the way they do case management is very similar to the way we do it. And so we actually got into some discussions with them about, you know, would it be feasible to develop a shared case management environment? And I think, you know, in principle, yes. In reality, there's a lot of things to overcome to really make that successful. So, you know, when you talk about a shared case management environment, that means for DEA, you know, probably giving up some of the control of their case management environment to another organization. It means potentially them being a service provider to another entity, because frankly, if they're much more mature in their case management system than we are, obviously, in the one we haven't even started yet. So we were actually looking to them to potentially be a service provider to us. But that puts a lot of demands on them that you know, they may or may not be ready to take on. And so, again, that was one of those decisions where, for our purposes, it probably is going to be more straightforward and easier to develop our own.
And then real quick, the timing from a acquisition strategy perspective, do you have a hope to say, you know, early fiscal 15 for an RFP, or is that even too specific?
Our timeline right now looks like early calendar 2015 for the release of the RFP. So, yeah, I think that'll give us time to look at the results of the RFI, make sure that we've, you know, adequately considered all those inputs and to really structure an RFP that will meet the needs of the organization. And then hopefully in a relatively short order after release of the RFP, and by short order, you know, something on the order of 2 years, we'll be able to retire the legacy system and then continue to build on that new system to build out the additional functionality that we really desire over the long term.
All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into maybe some of your new priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Chief Information Officer for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also,
that bid protest on the DOD contract.
Right. But did you know
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about
OMB's digital strategy?
Jeez. How do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Holgate, the Chief Information Officer for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Now, Rick, we've spent a lot of the show talking about these old priorities that you've mixed in some new ones in there. Let's just talk about what are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months? I bet there's something around cloud, mobility in there. What else?
Mobility, yeah. We, a couple of years ago, really moved out on the iOS platform, both with iPhones and, to a lesser extent, iPads, really, you know, trying to take advantage of the mobile capabilities that exist on those devices for our very mobile workforce. We're now in the process of doing a tech refresh of all of the, you know, what I'll call traditional desktop environment, which for us was substantially laptops. And now we're really looking at, you know, can we make that environment even more mobile? So we've just kind of polled the organization to take a look at, you know, the needs of users, and have found that we can probably shift about 2,000 of our users of about, you know, 6,500 to tablets. So we are looking at rolling out Windows 8 tablets and really having that be a substantial component of the way we support our workforce, and are pretty excited about being able to take advantage of that platform now too, particularly for obviously our criminal investigators and our industry operations investigators who are out there in the field doing a lot of things, you know, remotely on site with our regulated industry partners, and really being able to take advantage of the capabilities that now exist on those kinds of platforms.
Let me jump in real quick, because one question about that is, are you looking at that combination of tablet and laptop, meaning you connect the screen and it's a laptop, then you take the screen off and it becomes a tablet?
Essentially, yeah. So it's one of the Windows 8.1 tablets. So they're, you know, relatively lightweight. They're not quite as, you know, small and self-contained as an iPad, but they bring full, you know, laptop-type functionality in a very small, lightweight form factor. So you can essentially still do all the things you could do in the office, but in a much smaller, portable form factor.
All right, and the next set of priorities.
Yeah, so we, as I mentioned, moved to Microsoft Office 365. That comes with a huge amount of infrastructure for SharePoint, and we're now in the process of taking advantage of that by migrating our entire intranet to that platform. So we're really looking at that as the first stage of creating a much richer collaboration environment for the organization, and also using that platform to more electronically execute business processes. So everything from some of the things we do from an operational criminal investigative standpoint to administrative functions, I think we can use that platform to really transition many of our paper-based processes to a purely electronic format. So really excited to look at that as well.
And are you talking about even like time and attendance is the obvious one? That's probably already been made electronic. But you're talking about expense reports, that type of operational stuff, anything where you can just go online, fill it out, and be done?
Yeah, absolutely. And as simple-minded stuff as correspondence and a variety of other things, you know, travel vouchers, you know, all that kind of stuff that we now still pass around in paper format. I mean, even like approval for reprogramming of money among directorates, that kind of thing. We can really move all that around much more effectively on a platform like SharePoint. And then from an operational perspective, you know, a lot of the information our agents need in the field when they're out there doing an operation, they need the latest version, real-time, easily shareable. And you can do that much better on a platform like SharePoint than you can by trying to move it around in email, which is what we do today.
All right. And then so mobility, we have kind of back office SharePoint collaboration. Next.
Next, you know, really looking at some opportunities to improve the way we interact with our industry partners. So, you know, we've done some things over the last year where we've transitioned some of those processes from being paper-based to more electronic. Again, learned some lessons there in the sense that when we made that capability available, there was a huge demand for it. So now we need to go back and make sure that we organizationally can meet that demand. And that's not just an IT thing. That's also, you know, making sure we have enough people to process some of that paperwork. But, you know, I think clearly by making that electronic capability available, we tapped into a huge unmet need. And now we got to make sure that we can deliver all the expectations for the way people now realistically expect to interact with a government agency. And that's predominantly in an electronic format, in an on-demand fashion, and in as real-time a fashion as possible.
Sounds like we could talk much, much longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Rick Holgate, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Chief Information Officer and Assistant Director for Science and Technology. Rick, it was almost 2.5 years since you were last on the show. I promise I'm going to have you on sooner because you got a lot going on, and thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for having me, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.